Welcome back to Current Affairs, our show about the stories of love gone fatally wrong that are in the news right this moment. These shorter contemporary stories come out every Friday, while our extensive full-length episodes come out on Wednesdays.
We begin today with an update in the case of Corey Richens. You might remember her as the woman who wrote a children's book to help her sons deal with grief after losing their father to a drug overdose. Oh, except that, of course, prosecutors allege that the drug overdose was intentionally caused by Corey herself. Corey was arrested in May 2023.
Now, prosecutors are suggesting that Corey's mother, Lisa Darden, might have been, quote, involved in planning and orchestrating Eric's death. What's more, it might not have been Lisa's first murder rodeo. One of the detectives wrote, in investigating Corey Richens' associates, it was discovered that in 2006, Richens' mother, Lisa Darden, was living with an adult female with whom she was having a romantic relationship. That woman died of a drug overdose from oxycodone, despite having no evidence of previously using or abusing the drug, shortly after having named Lisa the beneficiary of her estate. Corey's lawyer called the accusations a baseless conspiracy theory, but a very interesting one nonetheless.
Our next story also has an attempt to use a drug overdose to conceal a murder. 74-year-old Curtis Englund, 47-year-old Curtis Englund, was a Mercer Island, Washington resident who had worked up the courage to go on an online dating app a few years after his husband died.
Unfortunately, Curtis met 32-year-old Philip Brewer and 47-year-old Christina Hardy. In January of this year, the three met at a coffee shop before heading back to Curtis's home for the evening.
It didn't take long for things to go badly. That night, Curtis called the police saying that his wallet, keys, and cell phone were missing. Investigators quickly discovered that Philip Brewer had made a number of fraudulent transactions using the stolen card. At this point, reporters haven't been able to determine if Philip Brewer faced any charges in connection with that incident.
About a month later, on February 24th, Curtis's family reported him missing. They were alarmed after receiving text messages from him that seemed erratic and inconsistent with his behavior and the way that he wrote messages. After searching Curtis's home, police came to believe that he had been the victim of a homicide. This was confirmed on March 7th when they found his body.
Prosecutors allege that Philip and Christina, quote, appeared to have been using the victim's cell phone after he was murdered to concoct fake conversations between themselves and the victim in an attempt to lead investigators astray. Well, it didn't work. And this week, Philip and Christina were arrested in California and are now awaiting extradition to Washington State.
Next, we have one of the fastest jury deliberations we have ever seen on Love Murder, clocking in at just 1 hour. On January 29th, 58-year-old Rhonda Sigalski's daughter made a terrible discovery. Her mother and another 53-year-old woman, Paula O'Connor, had been killed. On trial for their murder was 49-year-old Richard Sotka.
During testimony, it was revealed that Rhonda had invited Paula over on the evening of January 28th. Sotka said that the group were, quote, having a good night until he came out after taking a shower to discover the women kissing.
His response was to, as he put it, snap and fatally stab both women with a large knife multiple times. When police came the next morning, it did not take long for them to hone in on Richard as the chief suspect. It also didn't take long for them to figure out where he was. They weren't able to track him by the GPS monitor he had been required to wear for previous charges, including stalking, violating a restraining order, domestic abuse, battery, and disorderly conduct. They were, however, able to use data from the tracking device on his truck, which belonged to his employer, to find him in Arkansas.
Richard testified that upon witnessing this, he, quote, became jealous and felt humiliated by them. The trial also didn't take long, just 4 days, followed by an exactly one-hour jury deliberation. Richard Sotka was found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree intentional homicide with the use of a dangerous weapon, 3 counts of felony bail jumping, 2 counts of misdemeanor bail jumping, and 1 count of criminal damage to property. His sentencing will take place on May 20th.
Our final story today begins with a harrowing 911 call. On August 10th, 2023, 36-year-old Ohio woman Deborah Frazier called 911 saying that she had just entered her boyfriend's apartment to find 2 burglars. As 911 operators talked to her, a gunshot rang out, followed by Deborah screaming and saying that the intruders had shot her in the leg as they were leaving.
When police arrived, they found that Deborah wasn't the only victim. Her boyfriend, Thomas Waddell, was dead in the back room of his apartment. He had been wrapped in a blanket and garbage bag that was held together with duct tape.
So what was worse, the pain of a gunshot wound or the agony of losing your loved one in such a violent manner? Or perhaps the worst thing was the fact that almost immediately the officers were not buying Deborah's story.
First, officers noted that the apartment was, quote, well-kept and orderly, and that nothing valuable was missing. Not much like your standard robbery.
Additionally, security camera footage from around the apartment building and nearby businesses showed absolutely nothing to suggest intruders entering or exiting the building.
Finally, an autopsy showed that Thomas had actually been dead more than 12 hours before Deborah had called the police.
As authorities dug in, a financial motive started to appear. Investigators determined that Deborah actually had another boyfriend at the time, whom she had manipulated into posing as a bank fraud investigator to call Thomas. She also created a fake email account to bolster the ruse.
They also discovered she had a record of making up false allegations. In 2014, she claimed to have been assaulted, and in 2023, she said she had been attacked by a man in a hoodie. Neither were true.
And then, of course, as always, there were the Google searches. A few days before the murder, Deborah had used her phone to search how to load a revolver pistol and how to uncock the hammer on a revolver.
A legal document reads, after days of planning, on the evening of August 9th, 2023, Deborah Frazier stood behind Thomas Waddell, as he sat in his recliner. She raised his .22 caliber pistol, aimed it at the back of his head, and executed him in his living room. She then set about covering up her crime in dramatic but unsuccessful fashion.
Deborah has now pleaded guilty to murder, tampering with evidence, and gross abuse of a corpse. Okay, those are some wild set of cases today. I am still spinning from Corey Richin's mother and those new accusations. We will actually be off next week just for current affairs because we will both be traveling for a spring break. So we will catch you next time for current affairs the first week of April. Until then, I'm Jessie Prey.
And I'm Andy Cassette, signing off for Love, Murder, Current Affairs.